The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
With just days to go until the World Cup begins, the Football Weekly team roars into action to preview it all for you. Are Spain as nailed on as they say? Are the North Koreans really as naughty? And what of England? Microscopes at the ready. We check out their chances. Are they champs in the making, or do they have as much chance of surviving the group as a Spinal Tap drummer? All of that, plus our predictions of the tops and flops of South Africa 2010, and more miscellany than a box set of Dallas in World Cup Daily. Here we go then, 4 years in the making, World Cup Daily, and in our throbbing, humming World Cup HQ, high above the veldt, etc., etc. Guardian sports writers Barney Roney, Barry Glendinning, and just in from the realm of pure thought, Jonathan Wilson, author of a brand new book, aren't you, Jonathan?
I am, yes, thank you for mentioning it. It's called The Anatomy of England, and it looks at 10 key games in England's history and tries to draw conclusions from them.
All right. Not, say, taking a body and making each player a different part of England's anatomy. Say, John Terry would be... Well, anyway.
No. Peter Crouch's spindly legs underneath Sean Wright Phillips's Subbuteo-sized torso.
That's another idea, isn't it?
With David James's giant bouffanted head on top.
Magnificent. That's very interesting. We'll be talking more about England in a second or two. Barney, you've also got a book, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's coming out in paperback. It's only interesting because... it's on a list of things Fabio Capello's taken to the World Cup with him, which seems a bit strange. I mean, it's a slightly odd thing. I mean, Capello's a very serious man. My book's quite light-hearted. Mm. But I imagine he just assumed it was about him. It's called The Manager, The Most Important Man in Football. He probably simply assumed it was a Capello biography.
Yes. England, the World Cup.
England.
Indeed. Now, they qualify with ease, but with days to go. How is the picture looking, Barney Roney?
For England, well, it looks like it always looks. I mean, England realistically don't have much chance of winning the World Cup. England have only ever beaten one previous winner of the World Cup at World Cup finals ever, taking aside the 1966 World Cup final, which was on home soil and after extra time. They beat Argentina in 2002. That's the only time they've ever beat a previous winner. And basically,
at a World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
You expect the same kind of progress. There's three things in their favour. I think the expectation's slightly lower this time, which is probably a good thing. Relatively easy draw. And also it's going to be a cold World Cup, which sounds silly, but I do think it's a factor with the way England play and, you know, the way our season goes. Probably the coldest since Sweden.
Mm.
But apart from that, you're clutching at straws. I mean, people always say, I hope they prove me wrong at this point. I hope England prove me wrong, and I hope they do go on and win it. But I don't really hope they prove me wrong at all.
Journalistic impartiality, nice.
Well, what kind of message would it send to the world if England did win the World Cup? What does it say? What kind of template is that for being the best in the world? Like, have a bloated, overinflated league full of... Have a rubbish coaching structure, don't look after your youngsters... Get a foreign manager in and you two can be the best in the world. I mean, it just seems wrong that England would win the World Cup.
Morally, you're unhappy with that. Yeah, yeah, see. The oldest team they are at the tournament, which is surprising news. Older than even the Italian squad, even the Brazilian squad. Now, it does bear mentioning that the two oldest squads at the last World Cup were Italy and France, who, of course, both made it to the final. However, the ageing nature of Capello's party does seem to be a bit of a problem at the moment, with various members of it dropping out like flies.
I don't think that has anything to do with their age.
No?
They're not exactly going around on Zimmer frames and are sort of in the early stages of senility or anything, but Rio Ferdinand obviously will be missing. I think he'll be quite a big loss in so much as his job... On his day, he's one of the best defenders in the world, and his job, I would have thought, would be to kind of hold John Terry's hand a bit and cover for the mistakes that I think John Terry will make throughout the tournament. I've said it before, I don't rate John Terry as an international defender. I don't think he's ever performed well for England particularly, and I don't expect him to do so now that Rio won't be there to help him along. I would be surprised if England got past the quarterfinals, and I think they may not even make the quarterfinals. They don't have a strong enough spine. Their best goalkeeper is probably going to be on the bench, Joe Hart. They're dodgy in defence. I think it would be an absolute travesty if a team where Emile Heskey is likely to be a first-choice striker
Crouch has got the number 9 jersey. I don't know if that means that he's ahead of Heskey and Cabela.
Well, I would certainly have him ahead of Heskey in the pecking order, but I think someone, possibly Barney, wrote last week that no England team has started with the numbers 1 to 11 in the World Cup for many, many, many years.
Can I just say about John Terry? I mean, I know what you're saying, but he doesn't go around making mistakes in England games, really. I mean, he's not an error-prone defender. There might be a lack of mobility. Mm. It's not what you think of when you think of John Terry. Maybe a lack of mobility that means he's not...
What do you think of? Actually, let's not go there.
Yeah. I'm now going to say something controversial. I think there is a good team in there, and that if you're willing to play Wayne Rooney in his Manchester United position of this season, you don't need to compromise on who's going to be your big man up front, who really isn't that good but fits the system. And you can play a kind of 4-3-2-1, something along those lines, as, you know, and you don't have to compromise with who's going to be your crouchy Heskey type figure.
No, I mean, we were discussing this earlier. I think there's a lot of logic to what you say, especially with two attacking fullbacks. That, I mean, we were talking about playing a 4-3-3, weren't we? With Barry holding, Gerrard and Lampard ahead of him, Joe Cole on the left, Lennon on the right, Rooney centre forward. Then you'd have Glenn Johnson, Ashley Cole providing width from fullback. I think there is a logic to that. The only issue, well, I guess there's two issues. One, England haven't done that in the last 2 years, and would Capello suddenly introduce a new formation? I suspect not. Has Capello ever played a single striker system? I couldn't think of a time when he had. Maybe odd games, but I think he's pretty much always been a two striker.
But the point
manager.
Is that international but football also, is different from club football. You can't bring players in to fit your system.
Sure,
you know, this is his challenge.
But my other worry with that would be that having Heskey or Crouch, and this is particularly relevant to England, is if you're under pressure at the back playing a 4-3-3. You've pretty much got to pass your way out. If you're playing with a big centre forward and Ben Rooney off him, at least it is an out ball. I mean, it's a miserable way to look at it.
This is England's problem in every tournament I've ever watched them in, is this idea of an out ball or, you know, hit the big man. I mean, this is what we need to fight against.
Well, I would argue, though, that the one time when we did beat... When have I ever called England we? When I got totally carried away by it. There's this deluge of crap adverts kind of telling me that this is we. The only time when England have ever beaten, apart from 66, a World Cup winner in 2002, England invited a huge amount of pressure in the last 20 minutes of that game by bringing on Wayne Bridge for Teddy Sheringham, losing the out ball, and then Argentina penned them back when England had actually been dominating the first 15, 20 minutes of that second half. So I think the out ball is crucial to England. It probably shouldn't be, but the fact is the players we've got, especially with Noah Ferdinand.
Now, Dubrovsky says the reason that England are expected to make the semis is that they have by far the easiest run-in of any of the seeded teams.
Who is expecting them to make the semis? Well, because even this year, the expectations seem to be very low.
Did Capello not say something about...
Well, they have to beat Brazil to reach the semis.
Well, everyone else will have to play one of the big teams at the quarterfinal stage, but
they don't
England
have to beat Brazil to reach the semis.
This is what Dubrovsky says. Presumably did some reading before he wrote this. Everyone else will have to play one of the big teams at the quarterfinal stage, but England will most likely be up against either the best team from Group A, where the seeded team is South Africa, or the second best team from Group B. Unless Argentina have a shocker in the group stage, the toughest team they can get will be France. Not a pushover, of course, but severely disadvantaged by their terrible manager, says Dubrovsky. Oh, nice research, Dubrovsky. Good stuff.
But is Dubrovsky not presuming that England are going to get past the second round? I mean, I've so excited about the World Cup, I've already filled in my wall chart, and England got beaten by Serbia in the last 16.
Did they?
Yeah. It was close, though. Penalties.
All right. Wish you'd told us that before we just spent the last 10 minutes discussing their chances. You're not. How did they do in the group, actually? How did they do in their opening game against America?
They were surprisingly beaten by America.
Not that surprising.
A shock result. I think while England are... England's players, England's fans, many of them aren't as... sort of being as arrogantly presumptuous going into this tournament as they often are. I do think it would be a huge upset if America beat them. But I have a feeling America are going to get a result against England.
That's going to be a really good game. I think people have underestimated what fun that game could be. I think America are quite a tough, feisty, slightly dirty team.
Well, they had a brilliant time last, European summer, down in South Africa last year, being the only team in the last 37 matches to beat Spain. The last 40-something.
They're very serious and they're very fit and they like to get stuck in. I think it could kick off a bit. I think it could be a really good game.
Excellent. And, of course, you've also got, who are the other teams in there? Slovenia, smallest country ever at the World Cup. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Third smallest, I think.
Oh, goodness.
But they are the smallest to qualify for two non-consecutive World Cups.
Ah.
Which sounds like a bizarre stat, but when Northern Ireland qualified, it was essentially the same squad in 1986, whereas this is two completely separate squads. Astonishing achievement. And they're also kind of compact and physical and feisty. I think it's going to be an interesting group, but not a particularly attractive group.
What about Algeria?
Rubbish.
Really?
They are shocking.
Yeah.
They were awful in the African Cup of Nations. Somehow they beat Egypt to get to this tournament, and it's a real shame Egypt aren't here, because Egypt would possibly be genuine contenders. But Algeria, I think, last spotted by me anyway, being slaughtered in a friendly by a pretty average Republic of Ireland side that wasn't trying too hard.
All right, so you reckon the group would be what? USA and England getting out of the group in that order? For you, Barry,
well, I'll be honest, I don't know much about Slovenia, so I'd be curious to hear if Johnson thinks they're any good or not.
I think they're very capable of taking advantage of teams who underestimate them. I think England should go through, and then between USA and Slovenia. Slovenia have a slight advantage possibly in that they play Algeria first, so they get 3 points on the board straight away. And whether that will then buoy them, that they would only need draws from the games against USA and England to go through probably. But they're just very solid and compact and unfussy and do the simple things well and play totally within their limitations and get the best out of what's available. So I think very impressive in that regard. But I mean, they're not a great side. Let's not kind of get overexcited.
All right. One last thing on the whole England front. Fabio Capello. It's a strange business, tournament football. You take your team out there, not necessarily the best group of individuals win, but it's all about who can come together, who has the luck at the draw over the 4 weeks, etc. And massively, the kind of spirit that the manager can bring to the team, as Lippi illustrated so well in the last World Cup. Is this not now what Capello has been brought in to do? The qualifying was fantastic, the turnaround he wrought in their fortunes, but now getting heads together, getting the spirit together, getting team minds focused.
Yeah, he is very experienced in title run-ins and in playing quite a few games in a very short space of time, and yeah, this is his moment, isn't it?
Right, what a rip-roaring part one that was. And there's more to come, as very, very shortly we find out more about this team that everybody's a touting for the title, Spain, with our man, and indeed everybody's man these days, Sid Lowe in Madrid. Plus loads of other stuff too. Right, now, if you're keen for the latest up-to-the-minute info on this exciting World Cup, guardian.co.uk/World Cup 2010 is the place to find that and much, much more. Next up, though, on World Cup Daily, we get to speak to Sid Lowe. Dr. Sid Lowe, of course, published author and all-round expert on everything from Spanish football to collecting crockery. Sid, how are you? Are you excited?
You know what, I am. I was sort of not really, because it's been a very busy and very long season, and it was just sort of, you know, it's been very intense, and it's starting to slow down. And what really got me excited, I think, was, and I probably shouldn't admit this, but getting my sticker album. I'm really excited now.
I'm quite excited about my sticker album too. But
have you got stickers?
By proxy, I have. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yes.
So you mean you're pretending it's down to some offspring of yours, but in fact it's you.
Tell me, Sid, because I can't remember.
I love it. It's brilliant. But you know what? I've had, what is it? I think it's, I think I'm right in saying it's 250 stickers now. And
no
players. They're conning us.
All right. No, there's less than that, actually, because we counted. We worked out what budget we're going to have to set aside for this pastime. There might not be any North Korea stickers, though. Am I right? A North Korea?
No, I think there's North Korea in there.
There are in there.
There's two lots of Koreans, definitely. I'm sure of that, yeah.
Right. Somebody wrote an article the other day, I think it was in The Guardian, actually, about how difficult it is to collect all the stickers. And the kind of subheading was this thing saying, has anyone got a Danny Shittu, right? And I showed this to my son, the article, because he's collecting the things. And the other day he got a Danny Shittu, and he said, look at this, Dad, I got one of the rarest cards and stickers in the world. Because that article said no one's got a Danny Shittu. What price Danny Shittu?
Danny Shittu? I bet QPR fans are delighted.
Yeah.
It's
anyway,
also,
so,
by the way,
Ryan,
I'm going to defend it on professional terms here.
Yeah.
Collecting football stickers is the best way to get to know the players in the World Cup.
What have you learned?
Well, you just start to get to know the names and the faces and stuff. Because let's be honest, until 2 days ago when I started sticking these things in, I didn't know any of the Korean players or the New Zealand players. I now know that, what was his name, Rory Fallon, I think, who plays for New Zealand. I now know that he's rubbish, or at least he must be, because I've got three of them.
And yet he's better than his dad, so the song goes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Sid, Spain. They look as slick as the Gulf of Mexico after BP's gone through with it. But what weaknesses are there, Sid?
That's a very good question. What are the weaknesses in the Spain squad? Vicente del Bosque is genuinely obsessed with the weakness being the assumption that they're favourites. And I think he's been really concerned about this. He's been talking about it for a long, long time now. I did an interview with him way back in February when he was talking about being favourites as a terrible trap. And he was really concerned about there being this kind of two sides of the World Cup coin for Spain. Either you win it, or you're completely and utterly rubbish. And I think he was concerned that people would say, let's say Spain play very well and get to the semi-finals. Everyone would go, nah, you're rubbish. You should have won it. And he's really worried about that. I was talking to him the other day as well, and I do think this is something that's starting to get to him. He's concerned about the degree of euphoria surrounding the squad. I do think that it's true, though, that euphoria surrounds a squad rather than penetrates a squad, just as I think the depression and the pessimism that tended to surround Spain in the past didn't necessarily always impact on the squad itself. And I think the European Championships have changed their mindset. So in that sense, they're stronger. I've got one or two very slight concerns. And I think if they get a couple of key injuries in central midfield, then they could have one or two problems. I must admit, the only problem I've got with Vicente del Bosque's squad is the absence of Marcus Senna, which I think is a real pity and could be problematic. But broadly speaking, you look at Spain, and though they don't have weaknesses, they sort of do at the two fullback positions. But the thing about Spain, of course, is they keep the ball so well that weakness doesn't often get exposed.
Mm. As you say, it is a decent group they've got with Chile, Honduras and Switzerland. But things could get more difficult after that second round, either Brazil or Portugal or Ivory Coast.
Yeah, and then the next game would in theory be someone out of the Italy and Holland group, I think. And it does. I mean, this is one of the things that sort of I'm always a bit surprised about. When there's a draw for the World Cup, everybody talks about all good draw or all bad draw based on the group. But in a way, the group doesn't matter. I mean, unless, of course, you get the group of death. In a way, the group doesn't matter. What matters is who you then get in what the Spanish describe as a cruce, you know, the next set of games. While Spain's group in on the face of it, I think, is relatively comfortable, given the teams they could have got, it's not bad at all. I think what comes next is quite difficult. If they win their group and Brazil win the group, then they will avoid the Brazilians. But if one is second and one is first, and they might well get Brazil, then they obviously, even if it's not Brazil, because it's the group of death, there's Portugal and Ivory Coast, as you say, then there's Holland and Italy. So I think Spain's progress to the final, unless other teams get knocked out on the way and it opens up that pathway to them, I think their progress to the final is going to be really quite difficult.
Mm-hmm. With all of that, set a prediction. Will they get to the final? Are they going to win the World Cup?
I think if we're going to take it absolutely logically, then I think they should win the World Cup, in that they are, I think, probably the best side right now. But I don't think they will. I think they'll come up unstuck at some stage against someone. My money would be on Spain reaching the semi-finals.
And who do you think is going to win it then?
Well, this is partly just inertia and partly just cowardice and not really wanting to make a proper prediction, but it's sort of difficult not to say Brazil. It's difficult not to look at the Brazilians and think they'll do well. I would love to think that Argentina would do well, because I'd really, really like to see Leo Messi have a great, great tournament. I'd like to see Sergio Aguero have a good tournament as well. I think perhaps people don't realise just how good he is. And then I suppose you look at the way Holland are playing, but then you look at the way Holland always play, and they never quite seem to do it.
Mm, you used to say the same about Spain, of course, before 2000.
Of course, exactly. And it does take one tournament to sort of blow that apart. And I think having won European Championships, and that has changed Spain's, not just their past, but I think their future as well. I think that's certainly very significant. So it's difficult to judge. I must admit, there's a little bit of me that thinks and would quite like to think that France might be an absolute embarrassment.
Right. And biggest flop, France, then. Best player, you're probably going to go for, what, Hakuna Aguero, are you? Or Messi?
I'd love it to be Leo Messi, and I think he is the best player in the world. I'm just not sure that the Argentinian squad will bring the best out of him. I wouldn't be that surprised if it was someone like Robin van Persie.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Barney.
Well, I'm not sure that winning Euro 2008 has necessarily cleaned the slate for Spain at World Cups as well. I mean, we were talking about this before. Winning the Euros isn't necessarily a passport to doing well at World Cups.
And why?
Because it hasn't happened in the past. I mean, Holland won Euro 88 and were then supposed to go on and dominate at World Cups and didn't. Czechoslovakia have won it. The USSR, as was. Denmark. How are they doing these days? I'm not sure. You know, Spain won Euro 2008, I think, on the back of how well their players have done in Champions Leagues, and how a European tournament immediately after that seemed perfectly natural for them. It gave them the confidence to say we're the best in Europe. But winning the World Cup is extremely difficult. You have to go to another continent, and there are certain teams who have a culture of winning World Cups. And I think that's Spain's biggest obstacle still. I don't think Euro 2008 removes that. And I think that will still come into play when you have big games later in the tournament.
Well, I find the whole issue slightly odd that 18 World Cups and only 7 World Cup winners, whereas 13 European Championships and 9 winners. So for some reason, the European Championship throws up slightly freakish winners, such as Greece and Denmark.
It's shorter as well. Would that have an impact?
Well, it is shorter, but I mean, I suppose when...
It used to be significantly
when
shorter.
When Denmark, when it was 2 games shorter, it was 5 games as opposed to 7. But when Greece won it at 6 games, only 1 game shorter. Now, is that enough to make a big difference? Or is it just that there have been freakish World Cup winners, but they've been slightly masked by being teams who've already won the World Cup, like Italy, twice, for instance, risking the wrath of Italians for saying that 2006 was slightly freakish. Even 82 was slightly freakish, but nobody expected them to win it. And although they were fantastic in those last 4 games in 82, they had a very poor group stage. It was suddenly clicked at the right moment, in the same way it suddenly clicked for Denmark at the end of the groups in 92. So I would suspect that if we were sitting here in 100 years' time, we would find there'd been a couple of...
It's going to feel like that. Give it a couple of weeks.
There will have been a couple of odd World Cup winners who will have just...
We are going to be sitting here in 100 years' time, aren't we?
Will have just hit their rhythm at the right time.
Only new World Cup winner recently is France.
Would it be absurd if the Dutch won it or if Spain won it this time?
It wouldn't be absurd. It'd be surprising, though. That French team, 98 and 2000, I think was a better team than this Spanish team in the way they were more varied in their play and more equipped to win two tournaments like that.
Well, we'll hear more on the Dutch
a very telling statistic that no European team has ever won the World Cup outside Europe. I don't think that's a stat that'll change anytime soon.
Right. Well, more on the Dutch and their chances very, very shortly. Other names that are popping up a lot, of course, Brazil. We talked about them in depth towards the end of the regular Football Weekly season. Fernando Duarte giving us his lowdown on what is a no-frills Brazil lineup, but one that promises well, I think, for their chances, especially if Kaká remains fit and gets his mojo back. And that. What about Argentina? Maradona's toilet looks to be a significant factor, does it, in the...
Well, Maradona has a very impressive toilet, and quite what his ablutions arrangements have to do with his team's chances of success, I'm not sure. But if he's got a warm, comfortable bottom, then that can only help them.
Right.
I think Argentina will win the World Cup.
Given that that's where he does most of his thinking.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's where we all do most of our thinking,
right,
isn't it?
I think there's a sense of frustration with Argentina because they could be a fantastic attacking side. Yeah, because he can pick there's 9 or 10 really, really good forwards. Higuain, Milito. But Maradona seems deliberately, cussedly to have picked quite a negative defensive side.
Has he?
Well, yeah, he's only going to play a centre-forward, presumably Higuain and Messi. Then he's playing Yunus Gutierrez in midfield. Okay, Di Maria on the left in midfield. But all the creativity is going to have to come through Di Maria and Messi. Veron, I guess, is a deep-lying playmaker. And also, this fact he's going to play 4 centre-backs rather than any full-backs.
Yeah.
There is a team in Europe who's done quite well this season playing 4 centre-backs, but that's Stoke City. And you'd kind of hope that Argentina would be aiming a little bit higher than that.
Well, because I think it was you, I'm not sure if it was you, but you might have been you who came up with this theory that the team with the best fullback pairing is the team that wins the World Cup traditionally.
Yeah, I think you can...
And they're not taking any at all.
Arguably back to 58, but certainly from 94 onwards, if you look at Blanco and Jorginho in 94, Thuram and Lesurzu in 98, Roberto Carlson Cafu in 2002, and then Zambrotta and Grosso in 2006, if not the best, and certainly those in the best form. And so not to have any attacking options from poor fullback, I think, could make you slightly predictable. All the creativity is going to come from 2 or 3 areas. You're not going to have people breaking forward and breaking the lines in the way that you would do with attacking fullbacks.
Those centre-halves are all generally fairly... I mean, Di Michaelis isn't going to be sitting back. I mean,
he's not going to be doing any defending, either. He's hopeless as well. I mean, I'd blame him for the Champions League final. That pathetic attempt at winning the header for Milito is a joke.
They are an interesting team, aren't they, Argentina? I mean, I think of all the teams who have a chance of winning it, they have the highest disparity between their most talented player and their weakest player in their team. I mean, it's much more mixed than any other team. You know, you've got players who are playing in the Championship alongside Messi. And it's quite interesting.
Jonathan, a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned in here that you may well have had palpitations when Maradona said he didn't need attacking fullbacks because he had wingers to cross balls for him and whatnot. So what do you think of his strategy, and do you think it will backfire?
Well, it may work, just because it's, you know, there's this pattern that's emerged. It doesn't mean it's always going to exist. And, you know, the thing with Maradona is that in his bizarreness, there's always a chance that the genius will somehow shine through. And maybe because the rest of the world has moved to more fluid style and the rest of the world does seem to be playing more attacking fullbacks, by doing the opposite, you create problems that people have forgotten how to solve. But I think there's still that lingering sense of disappointment that you could have had this phenomenal attacking side and actually they're going to be quite functional and quite pedestrian. And it's almost like he's recreated the situation of 86. He's created a situation of a team where six or seven players fit in and hold, and then Messi fulfilling the Maradona role of doing everything himself.
He finally seems to have settled on a team he's happy with after sort of trying every...
108 players, I think, last year he's picked.
Over 100 players in the qualifiers. He has settled on the 11 he thinks are his best anyway. So I think that bodes well.
All right, well, the group that they're in, Argentina, Greece, Nigeria and South Korea.
This is another advantage in that that's probably the weakest group. They should get through that. And then if they get ahead of steam, you can kind of see the Maradona effect kind of snowballing that. Can you snowball ahead of steam? I don't know.
I think if you're Maradona, you don't want to be doing any snowballing.
Don't you think Maradona becomes more of a problem the further the tournament goes on? Because he is basically an inexperienced and slightly flaky manager, and you've got these games decided on minor tactical
details.
But
he's full of self-confidence. That's a massive
advantage. He may well be, but if you put him up against a really, really top, experienced, wily manager who's been there before, they will find him out.
In his back room, who might actually be doing a tactical thing anyway, Maradona just kind of turns up and G's everybody along.
Hmm. All right, then, excellent. Now, also in a pretty easy group, Group F alongside Paraguay, who qualified very well, Slovakia and New Zealand are the world champions themselves. Italy, who, of course, came into the last tournament against a backdrop of scandal, the Calciopoli affair. This time around, there's a sort of vague attempt to whip up similar controversies, largely over the fact that some of the players sing the wrong words at the national anthem, and another one had a go at the police. But it's been a bit of an underwhelming build-up for the Italians as they head into this final week. A lot of the paper dominated, A, by other sports, and B, by Rafael Benitez and his imminent arrival at Inter. But there are all sorts of problems for Italy. They don't look in very good shape at all. They haven't got a particularly exciting group of players. They've got injuries to Pirlo, Camoranesi too. Pirlo, of course, a player who they've never been able to substitute with any success. They're not particularly clear on their setup either, I don't think, the players that they're going to have.
It's not all much the same as they were last time.
Well, last time around,
they won
in 2006, they were pretty clear on who the 11 were. There was some doubt about whether they'd be playing 4-3-3 or 4-2-1-3, and I think it's between those two formations again. But Lippi is experimenting right up to the end, or at least that's what's been the case in the friendlies, which haven't been particularly impressive at all. They got beaten 2-1 by Mexico, and they drew 1-1 with Switzerland, a result which was greeted by the Gazzetta dello Sport with the headline "Avanti, forward," which just goes to show how low expectations are dropped. But the thing there, of course, is the fact that in 1982 and in 2006, both times they went into the World Cup off the back of a 1-1 draw with Switzerland and ended up winning. So, job's a good one. The other thing, you know, just add one other little thing about Italy. And, of course, it's a good point you make, Barry, as ever, that low expectations is almost the ideal and the most fertile breeding ground for Italian success. But the other thing about this is that whereas in 2006 Lippi managed to bring together this incredibly strong group and really breed this feeling of togetherness and brotherhood amongst them all, this time around there does seem to be one or two cracks and doubts among the squad, which may well be linked to the fact that this time around they know that he is going to be replaced by Cesare Prandelli at the end of the tournament. Having said that, of course, we knew he was leaving at the end of the other World Cup because he was walking out in disgust after his son was charged in the Calciopoli scandal. So, yeah, make of that what you will.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson. Just like being in South Africa.
Right. Well, we've spoken about Holland coming into this tournament. Let's now speak to, indeed, a member of the Guardians Fans Network, which is a new network of locally based fans. Barry, I'm paraphrasing here, that the Guardian has managed to pull together for this imminent tournament. And anyway, now Dan de Wilde joins us from Holland. Dan, first of all, optimism high there in Holland?
Yeah, at the moment, confidence is really high. We are playing really good football, unlike other friendlies in the past where we were really looking very bad. But right now, we're looking very good and creating a lot of chances and not conceding much. So confidence is really high.
Mm, not surprising. A brilliant qualifying tournament. And the friendlies, so you've been piling up the goals as well. Although Iron Robin going off injured the other day. What's the latest on his fitness?
Well, he just appeared on the national news. He said he will certainly be ready for the World Cup. He just doesn't know if he will be ready in 4 days or a week. That's a real change from the mood after the game Saturday where Robin got injured, where all the players were really down and it felt like Holland lost 6-1.
Of course, they won 6-1 against Hungary. But even if Robin doesn't make it back, I mean, certainly for the start of the tournament, there's so many other talented players, Schneider, Van Persie, in this squad. But perhaps one or two question marks at the back. Would that be the one worry for Dutch fans?
It is a little bit. It is obviously our weakest side of the field. Individually, though, they are not really good, but together they're really well organized and they don't let other teams have a lot of chances.
Okay, Dan, then finally, prediction, how far are Holland going to get?
I think we will lose to Brazil in the quarterfinals.
All right, excellent. Should be a spectacular game. Dan, best of luck. Thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Steve McLaren there, what a joker that guy is. You convinced by that?
I think the Dutch have been great in the last three friendlies, actually. I've watched them all, and they have been very, very impressive. The big doubt I had was over the fullbacks. Same issue with Argentina, could they get forward enough? Because Gregory van der Veel is a converted centre-back, and Van Bronckhorst, obviously a converted midfielder, who's, I think, 35 or 36, so perhaps wouldn't be able to get forward as well as he might have done.
Hmm.
But actually, van der Veel's looked great. Set up the penalty against Ghana with a really nicely weighted pass. And Van Bronckhorst had a really good game on Saturday, so maybe the centre of defence are slightly vulnerable, but I think that, you know, that quarterfinal against Brazil really is a key game.
Mm. Easy group, of course, that they start off with, Cameroon, Denmark and Japan. I say it's easy, of course, there's no easy games at this level.
No, I think they've got three, to be honest.
Right, okay.
I was talking to a Danish guy this morning, he was saying they've got injuries, you know, Simon Kjær, the centre-back, Sorensen.
Is he injured?
Yeah, and Bentner from Arsenal.
Right. And that's not good news?
All three of those are carrying injuries.
Right.
So, I mean, they should play some part in the group stage, but obviously kind of central players to them, so for them not to be fully fit is a big, big loss. Cameroon were hopeless of a couple of nations. Eto's chucking his toys out the pram. And Japan, I think, Keisuke Honda apart, are just very predictable and very ordinary, and they might almost squeeze through by just being a bit more organised than other people, but I still think Denmark probably should make it. Also, Japan, average height of the average Japanese male, according to the Japanese Bureau of Height and Weight Statistics, 1.72 meters. Average height of the British male, 1.77 meters. Tallest nation in the world, the Dutch, 1.82 meters. So you've got the very short Japanese against the very tall Dutch in that group.
Wow. That could be significant, couldn't it?
Could be.
Could.
Excellent. All right, well, Blunt Guardian posts in, who will win the Golden Boot 2010 at the World Cup? I've made the following conclusions, he says. Players should be in a weak group because most players who win the Golden Boot score most of the goals against weak teams in the first round. Okay, players' teams should reach the semi-finals and then lose it because you're more likely to score in the third, fourth playoff than in the final because the opponents don't really care. So the only aim is to provide the player with good assists. That's proved the case for Skelacci in 1990, Stoichkov in 94, Schuke in 98, Klose 2006. Says Blunt Guardian. Very interesting, Barney.
Are they? Do you think the golden boot's a bit old hat? I mean, yeah. do we care about the golden boot? Is that what football's about still
boots
these days?
Hats.
Like the golden
Monopoly.
Boot is an old hat.
All right, well, do you prefer this Art Deco? The other question is, who will win the Pauleta off-target trophy? Previous contenders included Luca Toni and Mario Gomez. Who's going to be the big flop forward? You know, not in a Pele medication sense, but who's going to be the star that you expect to shine is going to...
Well, it seems a bit easy to say Cristiano Ronaldo.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Because he's a very hyped player.
It's easy because it's right.
A disappointing team, but probably him. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know how well Wayne Rooney's going to do this World Cup. He's not really been in particularly great.
Is he going to stay fit? That's a question. Is Wayne Rooney going to stay fit for this month?
I don't know if he's going to stay fit. I think he's going to be knackered for the tournament. He's had a long, long, hard season. I was sort of mulling over him, his name as a potential flop. Didn't really want to say it in case I got absolutely slaughtered for it. But now Barney's raised it. I think Rooney could have.
I don't
a,
think it's Rooney's fault. I think it's the team that he's in and
no,
where England are going to play. He's a very good player.
Oh, he's brilliant, yeah, of course. But
we're all big fans. Here, Jonathan?
Samuel Eto'o as a flop.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think that Cameroon team is... It's a bit... You know, Graham Gooch said of New Zealand's attack is like facing World 11 at one end, Ilford seconds at the other. That you had Richard Hadley was so far above the rest. I think Cameroon's forward line's exactly the same. That Eto'o is great and the rest are rubbish.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But Richard Hadley did do quite well, didn't he?
He did, but the difference there is that he was a cricketer, whereas...
Producer Ben just said, wasn't he in Spandau Ballet? The very same thought was going through my head. That's an excuse to break into song, isn't it, really?
That and the fact that it was Tony Hadley's 50th birthday last Thursday.
All right, then.
Sneddon, was he in that team?
He may well have been.
Okay. Anyway, my point about Eto'o...
Yeah, right, sorry.
Is that I think Eto'o's genius is his movement, and that only really works if people are playing the ball to him, who players are good enough to kind of recognise the movement. I don't think Cameroon are, which means Eto'o just comes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, so they lose shape. When he does get the ball, he's 50, 60 yards from goal, and... You know, he's got three, four men between him and the goal, and he ended up laying off to somebody not as good as him.
All right, very nicely argued point. Okay, so in which case, so who do you think the top scorer is going to be?
I think people are obsessed by goals in a way that's unhealthy. I think it's just oversimplistic to get carried away with goals. But Luis Fabiano would
like
be my guess.
Luis Fabiano, I guess.
Well, I'd say Luis Fabiano as well, because it's often about a few easy goals in the group stage, and then
but they've got a tough group.
No, they haven't.
Don't they?
No, Ivory Coast are dreadful. Portugal are totally dependent on Ronaldo. And North Korea are defensively quite good, but realistically probably aren't going to win a point.
All right. And they play with a striker in goal as well, North Korea.
Yeah, which is great. But why? I don't understand this rule.
Yeah.
Why is it three goalkeepers stipulated? Why can't FIFA say, pick 23 players, whatever positions you want, but you can't replace anybody? If your two goalkeepers get injured, hard luck. I don't understand why you have to designate three goalkeepers. What about somebody like Jorge Campo, who was both a goalkeeper and an outfielder? Why couldn't the North Korean lad, whose name escapes me, why couldn't he be a North Korean Campo?
Right.
Oh, I agree. It makes absolutely no sense at all. I can't even see a rubbish argument for that.
Right.
But you're surprised by FIFA stipulation. Since when have they ever made sense?
So some things
but
do make sense.
From North Korea's point of view as well... This is how this whole Panini sticker, is there a North Korea page thing, came about. How easy would it be for them if they're prepared to try and slip an extra forward in as a goalkeeper? Could they not just pretend that that was a different player when they actually stick him out as a forward?
Are you suggesting all North Koreans look the same?
No, just that we've not seen any of them play ever at any stage. I don't think I haven't. And I doubt many FIFA suits have.
Well, they have played in World Cup qualifiers for the last two years.
So that's a no, then. That's what you have to say. No, James.
Are you saying that all players should be tagged, that they should have some kind of chip?
No, I don't think you should. I think North Korea should, having picked up the ball, I think they should run with it and see how far they can bend these rules. Yeah. All right, then. Who knows what else they're doing? Digging tunnels, probably, even as we speak. Now, we've talked about the fact that we don't care about the top scorer, and it might be Luis Fabiano. Who do you think the top scorer is going to be?
I think it would be Robin van Persie or Lionel Messi.
Okay.
Can I have two?
They certainly could end up with the same tally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Best player, the standout player of the tournament, Barry?
Lionel Messi.
Jonathan?
Schneider.
Yeah, I've got
this
Schneider.
This is contradictory,
as well.
Of course, that because the Dutch are going to play the Brazilians.
I did put that down before Jonathan said that. Look. Barney?
Well, I was going to say Schneider as well. It sounds a bit boring, doesn't it? Can I say something else? Dark Horses.
All right.
Everybody's really written France off, and probably with good reason. But if you just look at their squad, just look at the outline, forget everything that's gone, wipe the slate clean, just look at the players. They're too bad.
Look pretty good in the second half against Costa Rica as well.
Well, there you go.
And then they got embarrassed whoever they played against next.
But, yeah, a step backwards. That was a big headline on L'Equipe. Yeah. Good. Who's my dark horse, says producer Ben. I don't know, is she? I quite fancy USA. Mm-hmm. I know this is ultimately a doomed romance, but just because they did so well last year, and I think they could emerge from this group with honours, and not sure who they'd be facing in the next round, then rustling for group stage notes.
Potentially Serbia in a hilarious reprise of the Kosovo conflict.
Yeah, okay.
More like Germany.
Or Germany.
And of course, Milos Krasic.
Ghana not an option there, do you think?
Possibly. I think losing Essien. Krasic, of course, grew up in Mitrovica, this bit of Kosovo during the bombing. So,
right, okay. Well, that'll be an interesting one. Germany, just any thoughts on them? Are they going to be the flops of this tournament? Because we all say we can't write them off and that, which means that everybody kind of has to throw them in among the possible contenders.
Well, I've got £15 on Germany.
To do what?
To win.
Really,
tournament,
Barry?
Yeah.
What kind of odds did you get on that?
16 to 1.
I think that's not a bad call. I think they've got a decent team. I mean, don't forget a lot of those Munich players will be involved. They've all had a fairly good season.
Yeah,
I don't actually think they'll win. I just did that because I thought it was a very large price, and I did it with a view to engaging in some Ingelesque chicanery if they get to the semi-final, thereby guaranteeing myself a profit no matter what happens. But,
what kind of chicanery is that? You lay off the bet?
You lay off the bet at a smaller price. So you're basically buying big and selling. Buying low and selling high.
So you, at that point, you would offer somebody else to come and take that bet off your hands?
Yes.
Some impressionable, credulous listener would think, wow. And Barry got in on that when it was 16 to 1. It's much bigger now, but I could buy Barry's. And you walk out on it just before it all collapses.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just think they lack a bit of creativity. I mean, Mesut Ozil, I think, is pretty much it, so... I mean, but I think you can write off the Germans. I think it's the West Germans you couldn't write off. I think things have changed.
I believe you can write off the Germans as well.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm writing off the Germans now.
Right, okay. And so I'm just going to finish off with the ultimate prize of all, the world champion. If you're not backing Germany, who are you backing, Barry?
Argentina.
Brazil.
Brazil.
Really? Jonathan, you had something else you wanted
to... African teams.
Oh, yeah.
There seems to be an assumption African World Cup, African teams will do well. So I did a bit of research, and Ivory Coast's last World Cup game was played in Munich. Their first World Cup game this time around will be played in Port Elizabeth, which are to within 100 miles equidistant from Abidjan. So Munich was very hot and humid. Port Elizabeth famously windy and chilly this time of year. They're not going to feel at home at all. And they were all rubbish in the African Cup of Nations. Mm. And I think it's entirely plausible that no African team will get out of the group.
We were filming a few bits before this podcast was recorded, and I said that I didn't think any of the African nations would do well because they'd be naive at the back and have rubbish goalkeepers. I don't think I actually qualified my comment by saying this was based on what I'd seen at the African Cup of Nations, where many of the teams involved here were naive at the back and had awful goalkeepers.
Right.
So I'm going to sound like a big racist in that. But I just want to cover my arse
if
here.
If you did watch that vodcast or whatever it's called at guardian.co.uk/World Cup, and then there'll be a...
I think it's going up on the site on Tuesday. But anyway, right. I'm going to get them to put in that sort of subliminal message, you know, Barry, not a racist.
Not a racist.
It was actually based in some sort of research.
All right, excellent, Barry. And why wouldn't it have been? There is fresh and exciting content arriving on that site, guardian.co.uk, every second of every day of the World Cup. There will also be special video appearances and perhaps even the odd paper roundup as the tournament progresses. And last and least, there is the freshly christened World Cup Daily Pod, taking to the skies, high above the veldt, etc., etc., every evening, straight after the last game, on each World Cup day, and possibly the ones in between too, not sure yet, with an exciting and varied cast of characters. So make sure you tune in to our latest adventures in World Cup land. For now, many, many thanks, Barney Rone.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, JW.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, Barry Glendenning.
Thanks, James.
And as ever, thanks to you, the listener, and producer Ben. We'll be back Friday night with the big kickoff.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.